Blog Talk Radio.
Different dimension, different reality to me, and I looked around the room and people were chatting,
but they were not in the same reality that I was in. And this lasted for about an hour and a half. We got on the bus and on the train, about halfway through the train journey, I just started to, you know, be me again, or be where I normally am in this reality. So what that was all about, I don't know. And what else is to come, I don't know. Because, you know, my experience on Peru is that I never leave it the same as I arrive. Well, we've got a few days yet. And I'll talk to you more next week from the Stone Circle, where basically, well, my life changed, yes. But it was the biggest, the biggest individual experience, shall we say, 1991, February 91, 91, that put me on the path to me standing here now and doing what I do.
That was interesting, only because I thought, I've seen so many other articles on quantum leaping, quantum physics, and how we can jump in and out of realities. It's so bizarre, really. But in quantum, in that quantum state, you're able to transcend, you know, reality, and that's essentially what we do. We do that all the time, but in his case, where it sounded like he was more on a LSD or mushroom trip, that might have been, but that it sounds like a distorted reality. But essentially, and when you do mushrooms, or when you do LSD, or when you do mescaline or whatever, those things create that alternate, you know, that portal. Kind of opens up a portal to another reality, to another universe, to another existence, to another awareness, and that's why psychedelics are gaining so much more acceptance today, and because they have become they're used in therapy for post-stress syndrome. They're used in so many other depression and so on and so forth, but they found them to be beneficial, and we are entering a period of time now, 2012, where we are looking at a transcending period in time. So what would happen to David Icke and his experience, which was quite some time ago, but was also, he had a tremendous experience, you know, dimensional, if you will, or altering experience. And because of that, he, you know, developed what he did, and under great, great he got a lot of obstacles to gain the popularity that he did, but he started in 1991, which was, 22 years ago now. And I recall the different times that I have traveled beyond normal reality, if you will. It happens to all of us at one time or another. We just don't. Or we can remember it, but we may not. There was one particular time, which was a couple years ago, and I wrote about it. I wrote an article about it on my website, and it was called The Inordinance of Time. And essentially, what I was getting at with that is. And I'll read the article, but in the inordinance of time simply meant that it seemed like I had made a quantum leap in reality, you know, strange as it may be. And because of that, developed a, it was a very, very odd feeling that I had, almost as though I jumped into another body. And it was very, very strange, indeed, how that happened. But, hang on one second here. Anyway, let me go up here. Went to find the article. I'm just going to my website. You can read this article. There, and just put in the search engine there the inordinance of time, and I'll just read it. It's not very long. It's just it's important that we know. But I wrote this in April of 06, of 2006, and what it stated was is how I didn't quite understand what was happening to me when it happened, but later I did, and this article, it's as though I somehow jumped into another reality. And I call it the inordinance of time. Maybe it is the first stages of Alzheimer's, or I'm simply lost too many brain cells from living an excessive lifestyle, but lately I've seemed to be losing my sense of time. I just realized that it has been over a week since I posted a new article. I've been thinking of several topics and researching a few, but I came to the conclusion that I can research something to death and get nothing accomplished, except become more confused about a topic than I was when I began my research. What sparked this essay was when I got out of my car the other day, and I had a remarkable flashback to a time long ago when I was much younger. Maybe it was the sun or the spring air and a blue sky that day, but for some reason I felt I had been transported back to a time and place when I was lighter on my feet, carefree and jubilant. It was as though I was that age again, a young man and a long future ahead of me. I have been trying to discover what jolted that feeling in me. It was as though I had entered a time warp and was living that moment new. I had my mature mind, but I was in my young body and felt remarkably agile and young again. I know I've had other moments in the past that have made me feel younger and have great energy and enthusiasm. But this one was different in that it felt that, and that I felt that I had actually physically jumped back into time, that the past had jumped forward. And my mind was the same, but my body felt different. Time change lasted only a few minutes. But for those few moments, I felt as though I had been transported back to another, much younger reality. Which brings me to another related topic, that of reality. I once wrote a long essay entitled Random Reality, which attempted to explain the phenomenon of entering other people's realities. For example, I bump into a stranger on the street, and we start up a conversation of great interest to both of us. We exchange phone numbers and urge each other to call. Both of us were pleased by the coincidence and possibly developed a friendship that could change the course of our lives, altering our personal realities. This could also happen in a negative way, where I meet someone and they totally insult me or turn me off and negatively affect the rest of my day. I may harbor a bad memory for many years due to one unpleasant meeting with a total stranger. Either way, it supports my theory of random reality. Each of us lives in our own reality, as though we all exist inside of our own bubbles or wombs. We all have private thoughts, private habits, private interests that few, if anyone else, knows about. These private interests make up our unique character and ambition, or lack of character and ambition, until one individual randomly interrupts another and alters each other's personal reality forever. If we include all aspects of time with relation to what we think, what we like to do, and like to spend our time doing, we immediately find that the same amount of measured time seems to become elongated or shortened by extreme rates, depending upon how that time is being spent. 5 minutes of a root canal work seems far, far longer than 5 minutes of spending to speaking to a friend or watching a great movie. Could the last person I speak to before I die possibly change my eternal outlook? Could someone change my reality of death by simply interrupting my reality with theirs? There are many stories and legends of miraculously unexplained healings, raising Lazarus from the dead, or people in long comas coming out of them and living a normal life. I once met an elderly man who told me he was given 3 days to live. His body was ravaged by cancer. He went to a spiritual healer who touched his forehead, and he suddenly passed out for several minutes. He was hunched over, unconscious in his wheelchair, then woke up. He said he suddenly felt much better. The ravaging pain was gone. He felt strong enough to stand up, and for the first time in months he could walk and talk without pain. He told me that he felt so good that he couldn't understand what happened to him, but he was certain he had been healed. He said he went to his doctor the next day and walked into the office, and no one could believe it was him. Everyone thought it was his twin brother until he proved his identity by calling his brother on the doctor's phone. He asked that he be given x-rays to see if he was healed, and the doctor agreed to do them. To everyone's amazement, all traces of the cancer, which was throughout his body, had vanished. He was cured. His twin brother was standing next to him when he told me this story and verified every word. Both were in their late 70s and firm believers in miracles. My meeting them that day and hearing their story changed my life in several ways. It made me appreciate the powers of the mind to heal body, and it convinced me that there is a greater power over my destiny than myself. That power can allow anyone to be healed from physical and spiritual wounds. That power has the power to influence all time and space. That power is available to everyone upon the asking. That power is faith. Faith in one's own self and faith in knowing there is a higher power that can heal all wounds, interrupt death and reality, and suspend time eternally. And that's how I felt, you know, quite odd that my experience happened that way. And I don't know. I guess that's what I believe, you know. I found myself believing this, which was quite remarkable. And I found myself healing myself. The mind being able to heal itself, based on that concept. Last year, which was a very dismal year for me, I found myself near death. I didn't know I was until I was told that I had 24 hours to live had I not gotten to the doctors. They didn't know if I was going to make it or not. They did 5 operations on me within a matter of 5 days, and I was in tremendous pain. But thanks for morphine and painkillers, I was able to ride that out. But there was more than that. One of the books that I brought with me, was brought to me, it's called The Wheel of Life, and it was a brilliant book. I still have it, but I don't actually know. I tried to find it tonight. It's in my archives here, but there's a ton of them, and I really couldn't place it right offhand. But in that book, it explains the chakras and explains the healing, how to heal yourself through a concentration of your mind on the specific chakra that is in that is damaged or is having problems. Liver. You know, you have your heart chakra, your mind, your genital area. You have your there's what, 7 chakras, and with the what I did is I concentrated on the area that I had my problem and right in that chakra area, and I found that by transforming my focus, by changing my focus from the conscious to an unconscious focus, that unconscious focus of healing myself by allowing that energy to be focused on that particular chakra. And within 3 months, my doctors said they were amazed that I was totally healed. And there was no sign of my operation. My wounds had healed, and my body took a while to come back to normal. But, overall, they were knocked out that I had healed so fast. She just kept saying to me, the surgeon just said, it's a miraculous healing. I've never seen anything heal so fast. That was so, so devastatingly dangerous. And it made me realize that I altered my reality with my thoughts, with my thought power, with my concentration. But it wasn't so much that every day I said, I'm going to get better, I'm going to get better, I'm going to get better. What it was more so was that I allowed myself to not think about it. That each day I say, I'm going to get better, please tell me. No, I didn't. I stopped that. And I just allowed I focused my subconscious through these techniques that I was taught through in this book. They were simple, really simple techniques, but the concept was grand, and you have to believe that you can do this. But turning the power of the subconscious toward healing and directing it and not allowing it to alter from that task, what happens is that, you find yourself healing. You find yourself able to do things that, your mindset changes, your reality changes, and before you know it, health is restored to your body in many, many ways, and, it's still there, and it's still happening. It's been over a year now, and I'm fine, and I'm walking around, and I have no pains and no gains and whatever, but the thing was is that I was 24 hours from death. For some grateful God reason, I was able to get to the hospital. I just thought I had the flu. And it turned out I had a very serious disease. So, and I was only sick for two or three days. And I had come down with this debilitating flu-like thing, and it turned out it wasn't that at all. I had developed blood poisoning, actually. And I was in a state of near death. But it didn't take me too long to recognize the power that I was generating toward the healing of my body. And I know it sounds absurd and real, but when I think of that gentleman who, that elderly man who I met, and he was in a wheelchair, and he just believed in miracles, and it was at I was invited to a healing service after the, it was right after I met that man that I realized, oh my God, you know, there is a power here. And, you know, and whether or not it was God or his faith or whatever it was, but the man was only given 3 days to live, and his brother brought him down there to see if there was any chance of a miracle. And the man received a miracle. Strange. So, you know, that God works in mysterious ways, and he works through us. And through us, we, you know, that God is within us. And as long as we have faith that he is, then he'll heal us. And that's an amazing thing. But I wanted to read this particular article I wrote. It's on my website. I put it up last month, actually. And I wrote it in 2007, but I reposted it since I was redesigning my website. I've reposted and edited and revised certain articles, and but this particular one I wanted to read because I don't know if I have read this one. I don't know if I read this recently or not on one of my shows, but it's on my website, and it's a short article, but I think it explains so much of how I feel today and how I felt for the last 5 years since I wrote this article. And it says, it's called I Am Because I Am. It says, I have discovered that I am an endless source of continual creation. Every person is. That is what we are. We create. Our existence is based solely upon what we create. And having the ability to imagine and create and procreate are the greatest gifts of life. We have the ability to renew ourselves and ascend to heights of achievement, yet to be seen on earth. This is who we are. This is what we are. This is our purpose. We are because we are. We live because we live. This is the cause and effect of our existence. We attract to ourselves what we most desire. This truth has been known to mankind since mankind was first created. I desire peace and tranquility, and I find a way to achieve it. I desire truth, and I find it. I desire love, and I receive it. I desire knowledge, and it becomes available. I desire friendship, and I create it. What I most desire, I will receive. It will exist because I exist. I cannot create what I do not most desire to create. It cannot happen. If I desire to be wealthy, I must first understand what wealth is. Is it money? Is it fame and money? Is it love? Is it endless abundance of love, joy, and financial security? Is it good health? Is it everything I have ever desired or will desire? Great and true wealth is the complement of all of these. I have had money, and I have known poverty. I have had ill health, I have enjoyed good health. I have had love and lost love. I have found love again and again. And love is not something I can possess, it's something I must give. Friendship cannot be possessed. It is too much, it too must be given. Wealth cannot be had unless it is given. Wealth in all things is received, as a payment is received for services rendered. The greater the service one renders, the greater the wealth they receive. One's own existence is a gift from our Creator. Our parents give us birth. The guidance we receive throughout our lives is given and taught to us. Everything of value is attained through giving. Genius, art, music, literature, science, nature, life, health, happiness, love, friendship, kindness, compassion, and mercy, forgiveness, beauty, laughter, companionship, these are all gifts we receive. Why do people steal or murder or lie or cheat or become obsessed with material gain or competition against others when the way to wealth is simply to appreciate and use the many gifts we already have received? The greatest gifts we can give or receive is an idea. An idea creates a desire. A desire creates an action. And an action creates a result. We are who we become. We become who we most desire to be. And the speed by which we evolve into our desired selves depends upon the magnitude of our desire. We cannot become adults until our body and mind grow to that capacity. We cannot become all we desire to become unless we also grow into that capacity. Time is the essential element for the realization of desire. Good fortune is granted to all who desire it most. A great life filled with abundance can only be achieved through the desire to achieve it. The desire must be transformed into action. It can then be revised, but it must never be diminished. Golden dreams of our imagination will become our reality. They are what we most desire. And let me explain for a moment how I felt that last year when what I desired above all else was to get well, was to heal. And I knew that consciously there was very little I could do, because consciously there was too many distractions. But subconsciously, I knew that I could do it. I knew that I could direct my subconscious mind, my soul, to regenerate my body and to heal my body. And I followed the instructions of the doctors, and I took the meds, and I did whatever I was supposed to do. But beyond that, they didn't expect me to heal for at least a year, and possibly longer. But within 3 months' time, I was totally healed. And with that, I say that that's one thing that I was able to achieve, that I understand why. I'm sitting here talking to you, creating another program. And maybe, just maybe, that tonight's program will help other people understand their own, how can I say, their own power, you know, their own power. And that's an area where I have always been researching, if you will, researching ways to get better or to create more, you know. There's another one I wrote. And it's called I Have Been Told. And what the... Well, I'll read this to you, but I wrote this in about 5 years ago now, June 4th, 2007. On my website, I've dated all of my essays are dated by the month and year, day, month, and year that they were published. And in many, many cases, they were written that same day or, you know, within the same week, if you will. But the way I wrote my articles, so many of them come to me as an inspiration. I sit down and I think of what I'm writing, and it just comes to me, and I'm able to write this. Sometimes I swear that I read this stuff and I say, how the hell did I write that? Or where was I getting that concept? Or was that really me writing this? And I say, no. 90% of what I publish is not comes from an inspired source. It just comes from, you know, a source. I don't know where it comes from. And most people, I've heard so many writers and artists and musicians and so on say the same thing, but I totally understand what they're saying, because it comes from another source. It comes through you, and you can't always tap into it, but you know, but when you do, it's a wonderful experience, and you write something and you publish it, you know, in the same way as the, you know, songwriter writes a song or, you know, whatever. But let me read this, because it says, I have been told by thousands of sources to tell what they have told me. In the beginning of all life, existed a thought so profound that it resulted in an action that transformed nothing into something. We see empirical proof of the manifestation of this thought by its physical results everywhere around us. This is something everyone inherently knows. We visualize our next immediate thought, which immediately becomes our future. When we remember what we did seconds ago is our past. There is no present, past, or future unless we create it first in our minds and then in our actions. This is the essence of our existence. This is what all sages have told us. Now is then, and then is now. In the prison of our reality, we conform to the dictates of others. We assume the roles of leaders and followers, creators and created. I create you, you create me, we create each other as we wish each other to be. And I create friends and enemies. No one is my enemy if I do not wish them to be, and no one is my friend if I do not want them to be. I cannot love someone unless I want to. And I cannot hate anyone unless I want to hate them. Our opinions of each other are shaped by our own prejudices, our own experiences, our past and present teachings. What and who we allow to influence us create the thoughts we hold as our values, our truths, our reasons to do what we do. We have our own thoughts, created by our own minds, listened to by our own hearts. Our intuition continually guides us, but so many of us refuse to listen to it. So many of us refuse to accept their own thoughts as sacred. So many of us refuse to elevate ourselves to the status of free thinkers and individuals. If we simply trust the gentle voice of our intuition, then we will always be centered in reality. We will never be wrongly influenced by others. We will always be able to identify the truth. The truth I speak of is always with us. We are the proof. Our existence proves the truth of our creation. Our existence proves the truth of our own ability to create. We are the result of a thought. When we are born, we become the co-creators of our destiny, the co-creators of our creation, of our own creation. Those who perish young are victims of their own thoughts and thoughts of others, or they are fulfilling their destiny. We cannot know another person's destiny except in the way it affects our own, or they are fulfilling their destiny. We cannot know another person's. It takes work, learning, trust, faith, knowledge, and wisdom to break the spiritual and physical bonds that imprison us. Some receive all at young ages. Others receive these gifts when they are elderly, and some never become enlightened. The time we receive this understanding of ourselves depends upon the strength, resolve, and intelligence of the individual. Those who cannot see may suffer an eternity of doubt and fear, or their existence may completely end if they do not continue to create it. Our lives can only spiritually and physically cease if we choose to end them. We all exist by our will to exist. Why are we told we cannot die spiritually? even if we will ourselves to die. Let me say that again. We all exist by our will to exist. Why are we told we cannot die spiritually, even if we will ourselves to die? Every society strives to for the conformity of its members. Every society insists on conformity to rules, laws, and mandated morality of its members. A free thinker is always dangerous to society, or he or she is criticized, marginalized, punished, continually reprogrammed by their parents and teachers and other authorities until they either concede to the demands of authority or completely rebel. All of our prophets and sages have taught us to know ourselves above all else, trust ourselves in our God-given intuition to decide what we are to become. We already know it is within us, speaking to us, directing us forward, guiding every moment we exist. We are created as free thinkers, free souls, free to co-create with the one who created us, to become what we most want to be. Rebels are what we were created to be. Rebels not against our Creator or ourselves, but rebels against all who oppress us, all who try to deny us our personal freedom to be who we know we are. And I can't express that more strongly without using vulgarity, I guess. But, you know, to me, there's only one way to discern that we are who we are. That's that we are existing. Well, we experience pain, we experience pleasure, we experience everything. But we create ourselves each moment. We create the future each moment that we exist, each moment that we think forward. Like right this minute, I'm talking to you and creating the future and the present. And I've already created the past. And the past will be recorded. It's all being recorded. So later tonight, those who haven't heard this will be able to tune it in, and the past will suddenly become the present for them. And if they want to, tomorrow, the past will become the future. So it's all relative. It's all interrelated. So that what I create now, here in the present, has already become the past and the future. And it is here, and it has been created. Before tonight, these words were never spoken publicly. So they were written 5 years ago and published on my website 5 years ago, but they were never read to anybody. So what I've done is created an audio recording of my article for a future, you know, for posterity, if you will. And you know, that's what we are. We create, and we co-create. Whew, I can't explain it any better than that. I don't know how to explain it any better than that. Maybe in this particular poem, I can explain. It's a very short poem, but it's so much it more or less states how I feel about life and how to accept life. It's called Flower Power. So the flower has great power, as color and scent and grace, as beauty, fragrance, oneness with nature and oneness with itself. Flower holds the universe in its most complex or simple design. A flower understands its place and purpose in existence. A flower accepts its fate regardless of the outcome. Its seeds are blown in the wind. Its life takes root in all soils. Its desire is only to live and thrive. It gives its pollen or honey, nourishment or water from the dew of its petals or stem. A flower smiles with the sun, cries with the rain, sings with color, dances with the rhythm of the earth and the melody of the wind. I should be like a flower, experiencing the seasons, accepting my fate, being useful to the world in the way I was created to be. If I were a flower, I might be a weed or a solitary wildflower growing towards the sun. I would proudly display my colors wherever my roots took ground. I would move with the wind, drink the rain, bask in the sunlight, and be content with my life. I would be aware, not care, if I was picked, admired, or ignored by a passerby, harmed by disease, killed by frost, or uprooted by a storm. My fate determined by the seasons. And that's so much the way that we are. I believe we are like flowers. You know, we're seasonal people. You know, we have the spring of our lives and the summer of our lives and the fall of our lives and the winter of our lives. And we, and regardless of how much we protest or how much we try to enhance our lives, we nevertheless have to, we're prone to live with the seasons, but we must accept that. We must accept that. We are creatures that are subject to our natural environments, our DNA. We can temporarily heal, we can postpone, we can do whatever. But regardless of how we heal ourselves, regardless of who we are or who we become or how grand or how humble our lives are, we have the power to heal ourselves. We have the power to sustain ourselves. And we have the power to co-create our existence just as much as the flower does. It exists. But the difference between the flower and us is that we have we have an imagination. We can walk and we can talk and we can build and we can grow and we can create far, far beyond. But the humble flower exists for the purpose of its beauty, exists for the sake of existing. And its limitations are those based upon its own DNA, which it really doesn't have that much power to influence within 1 year or within 1 season. But over time, you know, they become hybrid, or they become interbred, or they become they adapt to different terrain or different climates, you know. And because of that, they become hardier, more robust, and create different, you know, species within the same genesis, you know. So we can believe that we exist, and by doing that, we do exist. And how we exist is simply up to our own imaginations. Whether we live miserably or whether we live happily, it's all in our minds. All in our minds. I want to leave tonight with possibly two more, but this one here I wrote back in 2008, and it's called Knowing Without Knowing. And this was inspired by a man that I interviewed named Kenneth Eckley. And in my recent interviews with spiritualist Kenneth Eckley, we discussed the concept of knowing without knowing. Essentially, this concept relates to the unconscious knowledge possessed by all. The obstacle to our ascension of consciousness is our own ego, the self-conceived delusions of who we are and what we are. The obstacle of our ascension of consciousness is our own ego, the self-conceived illusions of who we are and what we are, establish the boundaries of our physical existence and conscious awareness. Every human being is in existence, lives in two realms of consciousness, the conscious and the subconscious. It is the subconscious realm that dominates our emotional and spiritual lives. The decisions we make and the actions that we take dictate and create our physical existence. Few of us listen to our subconscious. In primitive and ancient societies, the subconscious was considered superior to the conscious mind. Dreams and visions were sacred signs from the Creator. Prophets and shamans were the seers and leaders of their societies. High priests offered sacrifices to their god or gods to grant them great visions of the future or visions and insight to solve problems. Billions of humans still do this daily in meditation and prayer. We try to bring to the forefront of our minds the visions or counsel of the divine. We are born into this physical existence with a preternatural knowledge of our spiritual origins. Yet we spend our entire lives seeking for their connection to divinity that is already within us. It is the main deception and the illusion of this world that its foremost inhabitant, man, is goaded and tempted away from himself by seeking all that is outside of himself. Man inherently knows that he is created by some greater consciousness than himself. Man inherently understands his connection to this world, and also to the world beyond death. He witnesses the deaths of his friends, the death of friends and loved ones, and understands that he too will die. Yet he clings to his faith and conscious understanding of hope and dream that extend far beyond all known physical evidence of existence. Man believes in his spiritual existence without empirical proof it exists. He knows without knowing that he is an immortal spirit, child of his Creator, eternally connected to the One. Each individual will eventually return to the oneness of their being. This will happen when the ego dies and the self is merged with the unself, and this will happen when the conscious merges completely with the subconscious. All polarity is dissolved into the oneness of being. This is what we all know without knowing. The time in our evolutionary process has arrived when the two minds of our existence merge into one. We already feel the beginning effects. We sense an awareness of light that reaches far beyond our own physical ability to see. We are more sensitive to the power of light and all that it brings to us. We are more distrustful, more repulsed by all who are not of the light. We are wiser in our discernment of good and evil. We telepathically communicate with our fellow beings by our intuitive awareness. lives of their joy or suffering. We are reaching for a truth that has eluded us for millennia and is now close within our reach. We are breaking through the gray cloud cover of the conscious mind into the clear blue oneness of infinity. And with that, I want to end tonight's show, I guess, but this is not... This is where we are, folks. This is where we're headed. You know, this is what the Mayans have spoken of. This is what all the prophets have spoken of. This is what all the philosophers of any merit have spoken of. And knowing yourself, knowing your mind, knowing the minds of others in the sense that you and everyone else are tied into this natural process with the same gift of having God within us. And I'll end the next few minutes I have. Let me end this with a short poem. It's called Unveiling the Face of the One. We have all seen the face of the One. He stares at us daily from above the clouds. His white and golden rays warm the earth and invigorate our bodies and minds. The One is our guide in the morning and reflects His brilliance upon the moon and stars at night to guide us in the darkness that must come. Foolish men try to veil the face of the One. They cast artificial clouds of pollution into the skies and spray plumes of aluminum particles and barium from planes. But the One still sees all. It knows all, and it continues to smile upon the oceans and fields and cleanse and renew the world. The One is above and below, within our bodies and within our souls. The One renews and revives faith for the future as it continues to rise on the horizon every morning and when we open our eyes. When the darkness comes as it always does, the light of day no longer shines. When clouds become more stagnant and storms more fierce, the warmth of the One is first to be evicted by the soul, by the cold. Look up into the sky when it can be seen without clouds. Look up into the blue of infinite light. Look up into the warmth of the One when the darkness evades the mind. Look up and demand all who we know to look up into the sky as well. Look up and see the scars of man made clouds and lines and patterns of deathly design. There is a great evil rapidly emerging on earth, so vast it now darkens the global skies. If all people would simply look upwards at the sky instead of downwards toward the inevitability of their demise and ask the One to return the skies to blue and rid their world of evil, this He would do. With that, I will leave you tonight. And, leave the idea with you that you can save your world. And I hope that you will. Because I am trying as much as I can to do that. And I hope there's something left for our children and next generations. And with that concept, with that thought, my folks, I my friends, I wish you good night, and join us next week. You're at Tuesday night next week. And I wish you a very, very happy weekend. So here we go.